Hello, everyone. Welcome to one of these stories where we have conversations with people who break through the challenges of living with type 1 diabetes to achieve whatever they want in life, both big and small. My name is Adrian Gonzalez, and I'm part of the Greater New England chapter of Breakthrough T1D. My guest today is Peter Sandler, who is partner at Gotham Equities and managing director of private client group at Dominari Securities. And Peter's passion lies in collaborating with organizations and companies committed to advancing medical technology and seeking innovative solutions for, for managing diseases like type 1 diabetes. And like me, Peter is very active with Breakthrough T1D, where he's currently serving as the president of the Southern Florida chapter. Now, I've known Peter for a very long time because his lovely wife and my amazing sister have been friends since high school. And so Peter was actually the very first person I ever met with type 1 diabetes, although at the time, I never gave much thought about it until many years later when my oldest daughter, Hannah, was diagnosed with T1D at age 11. And when he heard the news, Peter reached out and immediately and offered to speak to me. If I had any questions or concerns, he was going to be more than happy to speak with me. And of course, I had a ton of questions and a ton of concerns. And I was very grateful for his comforting words and advice at the time. So needless to say, it's a great pleasure to welcome Peter to the program, who right now today is in warm and sunny Florida, while those of us here in the Northeast and in Boston are in the middle of a snow blizzard. So Peter, welcome to T1D Stories.
No, thank you very much for having me, Adrian. It's not so warm. It's 55.
It's all relative. I mean, 55, as you know well, because you know Boston pretty well and you love Boston. You know that 55 in February would be shorts and t-shirt weather. So
For sure. For sure.
so Peter, again, thank you for making the time. Let's get right started, with the question we always ask our guests to start the program, which is, the very beginning of your T1D story. I mean, when did you get diagnosed with type 1 diabetes? I mean, what were some of the symptoms that you were experiencing, or that maybe your parents noticed that led to the diagnosis?
So I guess I would say I was lucky and unlucky at the same time. Lucky in the sense that my parents were both, well, my father was an endocrinologist and he was a type 1 diabetic. That's obviously not lucky, but lucky in the sense that it kind of, even though T1D is not supposed to run in the family as much with boys, it's a little prevalent. I had an older brother. He actually passed away maybe 16, 17 years ago from a hypoglycemic event. He was a type 1 diabetic since he was a baby. And my parents got divorced when I was very young, but I would always, my brother had test strips, these yellow, little yellow test strips. And I remember them saying, nobody was around. We literally lived in a house. There were kids and everyone was gone. And it was just kind of Wild West. But I would test it every once in a while just to do it, not even caring. And I just, like, I'm a grinder. So I just grinded through everything and I was feeling tired all the time. And I remember it was about 7 years old. I was boxing in the Silver Mittens and I went from being pretty good to just awful. Everyone was just slapping me around. And I was urinating a lot. It's the four T's, it's the tired, thinner, toilet, thirst thing. So I tested it and it was black. It wasn't even green. It was just black. My mother came home and I showed it to her, went to the hospital. I think my blood sugar might have been like 800. And
Wow.
all I heard was, I remember, you remember this, you're a little kid. All I heard was her freaking out, being like, oh, he's gonna die. And I was sitting there being, I'm never gonna make the Red Sox. I'm just gonna die at seven. And that was kind of the beginning of it.
Wow. Well, yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, I think the fact that you had an endocrinologist as a father, the fact that you had a brother that had type 1 diabetes, so it was already top of mind for your parents, and obviously top of mind for you, because even as a 7-year-old, here you are. I mean, a 7-year-old shouldn't be thinking about, am I going to get this too, right? So here you are as a 7-year-old kind of testing yourself all the time. So I think whether you knew it or not, you were probably, that was like a little black cloud that was, over your head. But at least, I know with others that I've interviewed here in the program, they were kind of in no man's land. Like they had no idea like what this was, what the next steps were. You're at least obviously, unfortunately, because of the experience and your dad being type 1 diabetic as well, you already knew what to do. So let's fast forward now. I mean, you've been now living with type 1 diabetes for almost 50 years. So when you think back to those early days, right? I mean, and I think I've heard you were recognized there in your chapter with an award, and you gave a very beautiful and moving speech, and which I listened to, and you talked about, back in the day, boiling needles and pig insulin and urine test strips. And then you look to where we are today. Right. And you're active, you're very much in both your professional work as well as with Breakthrough T1D in the front lines of all these advances that are happening in treatment and progress towards a cure. What has made you like stop and pause and think we're finally turning a corner here? Or has that moment arrived?
Yes and no. So I'm very, very close with Aaron Kowalski, who's the president of Breakthrough T1D. And in my mind, and I work with a lot of pretty smart financiers, he's the most intelligent human being I've ever met in my life. Brilliant scientist. And I don't want to be negative. There's all these talks of islet cells and without immunotherapy and all these. Will there be a cure? My thoughts are absolutely, and Aaron will lead us to that cure. And I think we're when I say we're right there, in the span of time, for me, being 10 years away from a complete cure or maybe 15 years is very close. But all of the things like I wouldn't know what you went through having a daughter that has diabetes. I every time I speak to a parent that has a kid that has diabetes, my heart is like, oh, I can't imagine it. Because having this, have your phone in your hand at night, hear a beep, and then be like, oh my God, what's my kid doing? And a lot of diabetics, about 50% of them, if they get to a level 3 hypoglycemic event, which is below 50, my brother would have seizures. I was a little kid, he's 5 years old, I'm 3 years old, and I'm giving him sugar in his mouth. The cures that they've everything that has come since then is a cure. So you used to taste your urine to see if it had sugar in it. Then you were testing with a strip, which, as I said, and you saw is that could have been anywhere from 40 to 240. 40, you could die in a second, and 240, you're going to die over the long term or get amputations. And that's only for a single minute of time, but it didn't test your HbA1c. So now you know what your sugars are over a course of 3 months. That's a step to a cure. An artificial pancreas that was invented in 2016 with the help of Aaron Kowalski, that is a step to a cure. Going from pig insulin, which is, I can tell you, is not the most effective thing in the world, pig insulin would do nothing. And then all of a sudden it would hit you like I mean, your sugar would go from 200 to zero. Going to NPH insulin I think it was 1978. I correlate things to sports. So I think it was when Leon Spinks fought Muhammad Ali. And now going to, a continuous glucose monitor and all this, they're all steps in a cure. I wrestled in high school and collegiately and was not able to test my blood sugars until my junior year in college. So you could have been going out and performing in sports. And you get nervous, there's always this intensity in you. And you would think, oh my God, my sugar must be low. Let me eat something. Well, your sugar could have been 500. So all these steps are huge steps, stem cells, et cetera. So I do think we're living in a period of time with advances in everything, that I see the light and I'm like, wow, this is really going to happen. But I'm not waiting for something to happen. I'm involved with a company right now that produces an insulin that will physiologically, it's proven, it's phase three, it goes directly through your liver, which you as a non-diabetic, you eat a piece of bread, your sugar goes down 15, it goes right through your liver. Your liver says, let me give Adrian some glucagon. Your daughter doesn't have that advantage. Anna's got a, it starts going down, she shoots, or it starts going up, she shoots herself with insulin, it peaks, then she's got a bring it back up, and these fluctuations can hurt. So having an insulin that goes through your liver is, to me, the holy grail of a cure until there's a cure. So I'm super positive about where we're headed and what's going on. But until then, Breakthrough T1D and other organizations, I mean, they're doing everything in the world to make sure that people with type 1 diabetes don't have a lifespan of 40 or 50 years or 30 years, they have a lifespan of 80 or 90 years. So,
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, just in my, so it's been 14 plus years now since my daughter got diagnosed, since Hannah got diagnosed. And just in that time frame, I've seen, significant, progress, right? So she went from, doing the injections to now she's got, the equivalent of an artificial pancreas, right? She's got the Omnipod and the CGM, Dexcom that talk to each other. It's on her phone, right? And it's much easier and more effective way to control her blood sugar than it was, just 14 years ago. And you're right. I mean, I think that when you look at the spectrum of things that are happening on this front, yes, there's the ultimate mission and the ultimate goal of finding the cure. But like as you illustrated, there are so many other things that are happening right now that are steps towards that are continuously improving the lives of people living with T1D. So it's not a cure by its purest definition, but it is definitely advancements that are making it easier and easier for people to, live as normal a life as possible. With this chronic disease. And, same thing with my daughter. I mean, she plays rugby. She played soccer in high school, and it's the same type of, it was the same type of thing. Certainly when she was in high school, it was much more difficult for her to know, she had to do the blood test to see, is she high or low before she got into the game, and if she was low, she couldn't go into the game. She had to, drink two juice boxes and then test again 15 minutes later. It's that kind of stuff, right? Whereas now, I mean, it's still not perfect. There are times she has to take herself out of a game, but at least she's got this real time, more real time view in terms of what's happening. So, one of the things that you've always talked about is that you've never let type 1 diabetes, define you, and discipline, especially through exercise. So you talked about, competing in, being a wrestler, competing in a high school and collegiate level. I think you've run a ton of marathons. So you've ever since I've known you've been very athletic. So that's, this discipline has always been a big part of your life. So how did you develop kind of this mindset, and how has it helped you manage not just diabetes, but the challenges and adversities that that we all face in life more broadly?
I would say, I mean, some of that is just inherently built in you. But diabetes, if it could be a superpower, and I've heard a lot of people talk about diseases being their superpower, it certainly feels like that because it's, look, God willing, this is a disease that is something that is somewhat controllable. I'm 57, I've been diabetic for almost 51 years. So, it's something that you can control, but it's you have to be vigilant. So, Hannah's 24 hours a day. I don't know what the number is. They gave a number of it at some event I was just at. Like she has to make XYZ amount of decisions a day. However many it is, it's a decision that you're making every 5 seconds. You're like, okay, let me look at my sugars. What do I have to do here? Like I know that I have a big 1 o'clock conference, and I'm like, okay. I can't be loopy going into that conference. I don't want to be the village idiot. I have to get something done. To have a job that's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, where you're monitoring your blood sugars, you're planning your diet like just meticulously. You have to exercise. Like as you know, I'm going through or I'm on the track up now, but I was going through a very, very serious injury that because of being diabetic and the stress of my job just kind of exploded on me. And to be able to control my diet during that whole process for the last 4.5 months and still somewhat try to exercise when I couldn't walk. It's just a crazy amount of things that Hannah and myself that every diabetic has to go through. And that gives you just an intense amount of discipline. And you have to have really strict time management on everything. You have to have resilience, mental toughness. There's a lot of things, and you have to be super goal orientated. So for me, idiotically, I always thought of it as, okay, there's a roadblock and somebody's trying to stop me. I'm going to plan my way around it or through it. And I'm just going to, as my coach used to always tell me, my Coach Facilli, he used to say, he didn't didn't get it. He didn't understand diabetes, and I get it. Not a lot of people do. It's a hidden disease, and if you look healthy, they're like, "Well, it can't be that bad." It's awful. But he used to say, "What do you complain about?" Like if I had to say, "Look, I gotta grab some candy, or I gotta do this or that," he'd be like, "What are you talking about?" He'd be like, "Don't tell me about the pain. Just show me the baby. Just get something done." And I think most diabetics have to have that mentality. So to have that much discipline in just getting through one day, you can imagine that Hannah is not going to let like some small little thing get in her way. She's already like defeating life by doing this.
Yeah, I mean, I, as her dad, I mean, I can almost guarantee you. I mean, you don't know where life would take you. Everything that happens kind of sends you down a new path. But I'm almost fairly confident that she probably wouldn't have gotten into rugby if she hadn't been diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. Because if you know rugby, it's a tough sport. I mean, you ended up with blood, with black eyes and broken bones, both of which have happened, to her. But she is her most happiest when she's playing rugby. And part of it is she's like, I'm not letting this disease or the fact that I've got a pump, that she has to like put extra tape on so that it doesn't get ripped off when she's in the middle of a scrum or something like that. And you're right. I mean, it is that kind of focus to say, hey, you know what? I've got to deal with a lot of more things that healthy people or people without type 1 diabetes don't have to deal with, but I'm gonna do whatever I need to do the things that I'm gonna enjoy. And for her, things like that, things like she's participated in the Breakthrough T1D bike rides, doing 100 miles. Now she takes it to the extreme where she did absolutely no training for it, which I do not recommend for anybody. But that was kind of her young mentality, right? It's like, you know what? I'm going to show that I can cycle 100 miles with type 1 diabetes and the ups and downs of my blood level of glucose levels throughout this ride, and I'm not going to train just to make it even more challenging.
Well, Adrian, you're not originally from Massachusetts, but your daughter is, right?
Well, she was born and raised in Massachusetts. Yes, of
Okay,
course.
so well, first off, she's being diabetic. She's got the "I can do anything" mentality, but she's also, I'm from Massachusetts, so it's the we're the capital of the "you think you're better than me." So she's planting.
Exactly. Exactly. So, and going back to my introduction, I mentioned how once you found out through my sister that, Hannah got diagnosed, you immediately reached out and said, "Hey, Adrian, I'm here if you want to talk to me. I'm happy to answer the questions you have." So if you could speak, directly to someone newly diagnosed or to a parent whose child was just diagnosed, like you did to me, I mean, what would you want them to hear most?
So unfortunately, I just went through that about 2 weeks ago. One of my best buddies, Doug, his son-in-law, Danny, who's a sweetheart, his niece is not even 2 years old. She's, I think, 20 months, and they have no diabetes in their family. They live in Washington, D.C. He called me up. He's just like, "Oh my God, what, they have diabetes?" This was 2 days after the Breakthrough T1D event that they were all at. So I called her up immediately. She's freaking out, her husband's freaking out, and I wasn't speaking to try to calm them down. I was speaking what I felt like was my truth and their truth. Now I said, "Look, I wouldn't know what to tell you if this was 60 years ago, because you were looking at the abyss. Who knew what was going on? I 60 years ago, if I was there now, they'd be like, 'Oh my God, he's like the poster child.'" I'm sure there's a ton of diabetics like me out there now. There's guys playing in the NFL. So what I told them was, you've been born in a great time. With the advances that there are in diabetes, this kid is going to get it. Once you get a diabetic nutrition," I told them, "and you'll get it with it." And by the way, Aaron Kowalski, when I say he's all world, he called them immediately. He set up a Zoom call with them. He connected them with the absolute perfect endocrinologist from Washington, D.C., got him the best pediatrician endocrinologist, did everything. I said, once she's on a Omnipod and you get through with it, and you know what you're doing, there's nothing that's going to hold her back. Sure, she has more problems, but I would say within the next, before she's a teenager, there's a very likelihood there's a cure. And if not, the advances that are being made, it's not easy, but it's significantly easier than it was. And this is a not just a curable disease eventually, but it's something you can maintain and you can deal with. So my thoughts on how you speak to people who are just diagnosed or a child are, man, you have it so much easier than we did. These guys paved the way for you and you should have no issues in life, but maybe good for you. You're gonna have to be disciplined in order to get through life. But if you have a little bit of discipline, this is not a disease that should hold you back.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think you also alluded to the fact that the T1D community is a very strong community, and the importance of community cannot be overemphasized, because I think that I know that was one of the main reasons I got involved with Breakthrough T1D, is that you get this diagnosis, no history in my family as well, comes out of left field, and you're just completely scared, concerned, don't know what to do, don't know anything about it. Obviously you've got your endocrinologist and your pediatrician that you start talking to and all that. But I think finding community and being able to speak with folks like yourselves who's lived with it for all this time, meeting other parents who now have years of experience of having a child with type 1 diabetes. And then I know for my daughter, Hannah, the first time that she met other kids her age that had type 1 diabetes. I mean, she was diagnosed at 11, but others were diagnosed as infants. They've never known life without type 1 diabetes, right? So the first time that she met other that said, these are my people, right? And it was such a like an empowering thing, for those living with type 1 diabetes to be able to meet and talk and share your successes and your frustrations and whatever, with each other. And then also for the parents to kind of share the same things, your success stories, how you've managed different things, because every stage is different, right? So like we've had, Hannah's gone through college, right? So people always ask me, like, when their child is about to go to college with type 1 diabetes, how did how was that? How did it go? Like, what did you, how did she manage it? So on and so forth, right? So at every stage, or even just driving, oh, she's going to get her driver's license. Were you scared? Were you concerned? Just seeking advice and just, getting, knowing, hey, it's okay. They're like any other teenager, right? They're probably, God forbid, if they're gonna get into an accident, it's probably gonna be more likely because they were like texting or checking their phone than because of their type 1. The risks of a teenager are broader than just this T1D, thing. So, but again, I think, like I said in my opening comments, I mean, just speaking to you in those early days was, very comforting. So. I want to thank you again, for that. So let's wrap it up, Peter. I mean, and with a question that we always ask here at the end, and you kind of talked a little bit about it, I think, earlier on. And that's looking ahead towards the future. And I know you've got a great pulse on the future again because of your work, because of your work, well, not only professionally, but with T1D and your relationship with Aaron and all that. So you've got some good insight here. But if you're looking ahead, for this future that we're all hoping for eventually, and that is a world without type 1 diabetes, what would that world mean to you?
What would it mean to me? Well, look, I think it's fairly obvious it's going to come from an Eledeon or a Vertex, and it's going to come through, stem cell. I mean, excuse me, a cell replacement therapy, which right now immunotherapy is going to cause you as many problems as diabetes, if not worse. So it's going to come from there. It's going to happen one day. But when you say, like, what does it look like to me? It really just, I'm sure you've probably seen the video. It's from Breakthrough T1D out of the UK, and it's called What a Cure Feels Like. Have you ever seen that?
I don't think I have. No, I may have to check it out.
It is about 2 minutes long. Look at it up on YouTube. It's called What a Cure Feels Like. It's from Breakthrough T1D UK. It's a known fact. You can ask my daughters and my wife. Not when the Patriots lost. Not, and by the way, Chad Momo, tight end for the Patriots, he's diabetic. There's no event in my life where I've ever cried. I just don't have that emotion in me. Every time I see that video, I'm like, Olivia, turn it off. This salty discharge about to happen. Like, it's called What a Cure Feels Like, Breakthrough T1D UK. And that's a world without diabetes. And it's, if you see the video, it's, they show these diabetic parents and diabetic people and kids. And what they're going through, and the angst that the parents have, and they have, and then it's a chaotic, and then there's just complete serenity. And then they show, okay, this is what life is like once they don't have diabetes. And it's like a normal life. Like it's a life like instead of the parent waking up and running into the kid's room to make sure it's okay, the kid's running in and jumping on the bed. It's just so a cure would feel like just peace. It's like kind of getting up one day and just being like, Jesus, I can just relax. I don't have one decision to make today other than regular schoolwork. And I think we're gonna get, I know we're gonna get there. It's a matter of, am I glass half full like Aaron, who's once again much smarter than me, so let's hope he's right. He's sure we're finding a cure within the next 5 years, or perfecting what is going on right now with Vertex and the likes. I'm a little bit glass half full because I've been hearing we're finding a cure in 5 years for 51 years. But I do think it's impossible with the amount of brilliant endocrinologists and scientists that are working on this. It's impossible for me to think that they don't perfect it because it's already there in the next 10 to 15 years. So I think we're there. And if you watch that video, you know, do it alone, Adrian, because you have a kid with diabetes.
Yeah, I'm
And
very
you'll
much
get
like
it.
you. Yeah, I'm very much like you. You know, it takes a lot to get me to cry. But again, I can see how I might want to have a box of tissues nearby if I watch that video, especially because, you know, it does as a parent. You know, you want that future for your child, right? You want that future for friends like you. You know, I remember early on, and I say this all the time because it was in a book that compared living with T1D as living with a colicky baby that just does not stop crying, right? And because you're constantly, you know, it's just there. You just got to keep thinking about it. You got to keep planning around it, so on and so forth. And to kind of build on what you just said, it's almost like that colicky baby just finally falls asleep, and you're never going to hear that baby crying again.
Right, yeah.
And you're at peace, you know. And you can go about, you know, the rest of your life without that, you know, constant noise and you know, distraction. Well, Peter, I mean, I think we could probably, you know, go on for hours talking about, you know, this topic. But I want to thank you again for making the time to be with us today, for sharing your story, and for all that you do, not only, you know, professionally, but also in support of a breakthrough T1D. I mean, your time and your commitment to creating this future that hopefully will be in the not too distant future of a world without T1D is truly inspirational. So again, thank you.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for doing this. This is, I think it's important work you're doing, and it's much appreciated by our community for sure.
Great. Well, thank you. And I want to thank those of you that are watching. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and family. And if you're living the breakthrough with T1D and you want to be my next guest on T1D Stories, reach out and I'll be more than happy to have you as my next guest. So, again, thank you for watching. Look forward to seeing you in a future episode of T1D Stories. Have a great day.
Take care, my friend. Bye.